in the night. Your heart fills with dread, probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who?
Welcome to another edition of Freaky Friday, where we tell your odd but true stories. It's Friday, October 18th. It's the morning after our final full moon energy show, and what a night we had.
I'm tired, but what a fun day that was. I get to go camping for the whole weekend.
That's
now.
That's right. As if this week were not jam-packed
for the
enough.
Second time in 1 month, I will be camping for a school trip.
The listeners are like, wait a minute. She just went camping. You're like, yeah, you're not wrong. No, you're not wrong. Well, if any of y'all missed our show last night, no worries. You can still watch the replay of the whole thing on demand at moment.co/sinisterhood. And you should still be able to order some of that sweet, sweet merch if you know you know.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Some folks couldn't watch it. It was either they're on the other side of the world and the time didn't work, or it's just life and we're all busy and we get it. So that's why we wanted to add the on demand.
Absolutely. It was a great show. Great way to end the tour. Wow. That one joke hit so hard that we got a standing ovation, and that, which is a first. Mid-show, full standing ovation. It was like that one where, have you seen that TikTok where it was like a can or something, and it was like a 15-minute standing ovation, and everyone's like, this is my nightmare, like no one refusing to back down, and everyone just like, who's gonna stop it first?
The last
that
time
happened,
I was at the Texas Theater when they did that Oliver Stone showing. We were all a couple of us were standing up, but not everyone. And I was like, stand up for Oliver Stone, you fucks. And then I was like, uh-oh, I sound like I am the type of person that people say goes to an Oliver Stone show at the Texas Theater. Because
I
am.
Did you say that out loud?
Everyone was cheering and loudly. But yes, I did say that out loud. And everyone did stand up. Those fucks did stand up for Oliver Stone.
Well,
so thanks
when
to
you're
everyone.
Threatened, you usually do what you're told.
So whoever threatened our audience to have them give us a standing ovation, thank you. And if you want to see that standing ovation, go to moment.co/sinisterhood. Now through Halloween, you can watch it on demand. So don't miss out.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get freaky. This first one is from Bree, and it is called Interview with a Vampire is So Sexy, Creepy Neighbor Encounter. Hello, Sinisterhood ladies. I adore you both so much, and I love listening to all your content. I've been a listener since 2019, and I just can't get enough of y'all. I have a less than pleasant story for you guys that I've been sitting on for way too long, so let's get into it. This happened to me when I was about 16 years old. I was a naive and eager to please type of kid, and I had a long road to walk up to get to my bus stop each morning. Oftentimes, neighbors would pass me while I was on the way to the bus, and we would chat for a bit. One morning, an older male neighbor, we'll call him Tom, was passing by in his car and stopped next to me. He was a dad to several kids and lived close by to where my bus stop was. I'd spent a little bit of time with one of his daughters and had been to his house once or twice, so I was easygoing about the interaction. We got to chatting and I mentioned that I had gotten all A's on a recent report card, and he was very impressed. He offered to grab me a drink from Starbucks and drive me to school. For some context, my aunt and uncle, who I was living with at this time, were going through it. They had just had a new baby, and my uncle was diagnosed with lung cancer. So they were quite preoccupied and not all that enthusiastic about my grades. Needless to say, I was happy to accept the praise. Typing this now, I cringe a little to think about how eager I was about it all. But I jumped right in his car. We grabbed a tasty iced caramel macchiato, and I went on my way to school. This happened a few more times. He mentioned at one point that he wanted to get me a drink for each of the A's I got on my report card. And one day on the way to school, I ended up leaving my phone in his car on accident. I got it back from him, and somehow he ended up with my cell number. I have to reiterate that I didn't see anything weird going on at the time. I trusted the guy and genuinely didn't see any red flags. I'll chalk that up to being a naive kid that chose to see the best in everyone. That is, up until this point in the story. One day, Tom began texting me while I was at school. I did think that was pretty odd, but in an attempt to be, quote, easygoing, I went along with it. It was pretty basic at first. What was I doing in class? We were watching a movie. What movie? Blah, blah, blah. Then he asked me what my favorite movie was, and I said, Interview with a Vampire. Still obsessed with that movie years and years later. He responded with, That's a sexy movie, wink emoji. Red flag. I think I responded that the conversation was making me uncomfortable and that I didn't want to text with him anymore. I don't remember what he said in response, but the conversation ended pretty quickly. I went home that day and told my aunt and uncle everything that had happened, the Starbucks, rides to schools, etc. I think they were more upset with me than anything. They told me I wasn't being smart, and I, quote, let this happen. After all that, I was over it and decided to take a fat nap and move on. After some time, I was woken up because Tom's wife was at our door. She had baked goods and an apology in hand. I can't remember if she was the one who provided an explanation or if neighbor Tom did over text, but it went something like this. I reminded Tom of their oldest daughter that passed away when she was a kid. They thought I was special and saw something in me and wanted to spend more time with me. Okay, because you would tell your daughter that you thought something was, quote, sexy. Sure. This whole thing was a giant bummer for a lot of reasons. But a big reason was that most people really put the blame on me. I'd been dating a guy for a while when this happened, and he made it very clear that he thought this whole thing was my fault for accepting the rides and Starbucks. At the end of the day, I'm really glad I cut it off when I did. I was in a vulnerable position, and I'm sure that I was a little bit more malleable than normal because of what was going on in my life. I feel sad that younger me felt that I was to blame for what happened, but now I know that I was just being manipulated by a creepy dude. And free Starbucks is hard to turn down. I have learned the hard way over the years to reserve my trust for those who earn it, and I am still learning that lesson. People-pleasing tendencies be damned. Again, I love you both endlessly. Your voices bring me so much joy and comfort. Keep it sexy, like Interview with a Vampire, and keep it creepy, Bree.
Can you imagine?
No.
A kid tells you this happens and you go like, well, good one, kid. You caused all of this. Maybe back in the day, you know, back, but
oh,
God,
I don't
no
think
more.
It's just still back in the day.
Right.
It's still very much a victim blaming thing, especially mm-hmm. when, you know, you're groomed and it's like, well, why mm-hmm. did you get in the car with him? Why did you agree to let him buy you a caramel macchiato? Oh, I don't know, because no one at home gives a shit what I'm going through. And I was just looking for someone to tell me, hey, good job on these straight A's you're getting. Mm-hmm. And he recognizes that. He sees that mm-hmm. and they groom you. They take advantage of it.
100%. Yeah. And it's a silly thing to ask a kid, like, why don't you have this world weariness that I have through experience, right? Young person who hasn't been through those things. It's one thing to say, oh my goodness, you did nothing wrong. I'm going to tell you why this happened. And the sucky thing is you're about to have to learn this new truth that some adults are gross and creepy and weird, and they're going to lie about their dead daughter. I'm sorry. This family may have lost a child, but I do not buy you made me think of my daughter. And so I said, that's a sexy movie. I think they were trying to cover up.
I think the husband probably said that to the wife yes. when he got caught, and for fear of retaliation in the form of legal or just neighborhood, gossip, she tried to make good on it. Because also, why is the wife showing up with cookies and an mm-hmm. apology? Why isn't the guy coming over to, you know, it's all very like, hush, hush. I'll make this good. Just, you know, we'll brush it under the rug. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, absolutely. Maybe they did have a daughter and she passed away. And that sucks and that's sad. But that doesn't give you the right to then prey upon another girl. And I also don't think you would talk to your own daughter saying, that's a sexy movie. Unless shit was going down with your kid that shouldn't have been.
Right? Yeah. A winky face emoji, too. There's something. And it's an emoticon, too. It's like the semicolon with the closed parentheses, which just makes it so like nasty to me. Just a nasty dude being like sexy movie in that. Yeah, and you're right. I think he probably gets the text from Bree that's like, I feel weird about this. I'm not going to text anymore. And he's like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Hey, honey, I just want you to know I've been giving Bree up the street rides to school and coffee and I've been texting her, but it's just because she reminded us, you know, it's like, well, now you're manipulating your wife too. I don't know what the situation was, but at the end of the day, Bree did nothing wrong.
No, and Bree, in fact, you were the only one with a level head in this situation, it seems like. Even at 16, you recognized, oh, this has gone too far, very quickly, in fact, and shut it down. So good on you. And I'm sorry that the adults in your life weren't supportive and listened to you. Your boyfriend also is a dick. That sounds just like an insecure high school kid that's like pissed off that an older man is getting you more than him. It's like an older man that she wanted nothing to do with and she was taken advantage of. But, you know, a 16-year-old boy is just like, whatever, you're letting some guy buy you Starbucks. That's not what's happening here. But all right, bro, you did exactly the right thing. And I hope that that was the last you ever had to deal with Tom. And I hope Tom just fucking stayed in his house forever and didn't do anything to anybody else for the rest of his life.
Yeah, hopefully he was not trying to rack up Starbucks stars by luring children into his car to buy them coffees. Fuck you, Tom. But yes, like you said, Christy, I think Bree was the only one that had, I think, the right move in this situation, which is, oh, I have felt something weird. I'm going to say something and tell an adult. And you got snake bit, like we say. Like, that's what they do. That's what predators do, is try to find somebody. Oh, well, they just got diagnosed with lung cancer and she's living with an aunt and uncle. This might be someone who will accept my attention and ride. So it ain't nothing. You ain't doing nothing but walking to school.
We tell Ella all the time in certain situations, tell an adult you trust or find an adult you trust. And it sucks when the adults you think you can trust then victim blame you and make you feel like shit. So be an adult. If you are an adult, be an adult that someone can trust if they come to you with something like this, and believe them and don't blame them, because what's that going to get anybody except abused more? Well, thank you, Bree, for sending that in. And Interview with a Vampire, great movie. We talk about it quite a bit in our show, which I'm sure everybody heard about last night. Well, yeah, last show.
But if not, you can still watch it. You still have two more weeks to watch it. But yeah, I'm glad you also, Bree, that you love that movie forever, and also you did not let this ruin that movie for you. Like, you hang on to that movie. And especially after this week's episode, that's your Dracula movie. Don't let them take it from you. Sinisterhood will be right back.
Well, this next one's from Lindy, and it's called Road Rage. Hello, Christy and Heather. Insert all the appropriate love and adoration I have for you both. And thanks for turning me on to a new podcast, Let's Go to Court. Even though their podcast is now over, boo. Now I added Kristen's new podcast to my list, an old-timey podcast. It's freaking great. She and Norm are so cute. Anyway, let's get to the reason why I'm writing in today. I've been listening to you guys for a long-ass time now. I didn't think I ever had a reason to write in until you had asked for road rage incidents. I haven't thought about my incident in a long time, so it brought back some PTSD. Trigger warning for guns. Flashback to December 13th, 2014. My son Caleb was turning 11. This was cool since he was turning 11 on 12/13/14. He had invited three of his friends to come eat and go to the movies with him. Two of his friends are twins, Lauren and Tucker, both male, that are a year older than him, and his other friend, Ty, male, is 2 years younger. We live in a small town, Harrington, Kansas, population 2,000, so we have to drive at least 30 minutes to get anywhere that has at least a Walmart. This is important to the story. We loaded up in my SUV and headed out to the movies. I was driving, and my son's friend Lauren was in the front passenger seat. The back seat from left to right was Caleb, Ty, and Tucker. Heading north, we were jamming out to their picks of music, having a great time. The cruise set to 72 miles per hour. As we came across an intersection of another highway that has a stop sign, a Chrysler 300 pulled out right in front of us to turn north, and I had to slam on my brakes to not rear end them. This not only scared the shit out of me, but the boys as well. I was able to resume my speed and go around the car. As I did, I honked my horn and just kept driving. Shortly after, the Chrysler came flying up on my ass, got right next to us, the right rear window rolled down, and the guy in the back seat flashed a handgun at me. Needless to say, I slowed way the fuck down and called 911. I was able to give them the description of the car, make, model, color, and license plate. Not sure how, considering I was shaking uncontrollably and trying to hold myself together for the four boys inside the vehicle. I was on the phone with 911 as we crossed different county lines, so now we were having to get highway patrol involved. I was able to let them know where the car was while still keeping a safe distance behind them. About 15 minutes later, the car was pulled over. All three men in the vehicle were out of the car, on the ground, with about four police cars surrounding them. Luckily, we were able to take a side highway, so we didn't have to pass them. I was able to let my husband and the other parents know what was going on, so when their sons got home, they didn't freak the fuck out. The boys and I collectively decided to go to the next town, Manhattan, Kansas, aka the Little Apple, to eat. Mom definitely had a couple of drinks at lunch, and watch the movie. I actually found pictures from that day, and we saw the penguins of Madagascar. We did have to stop at a gas station so a highway patrol officer could get a statement from us. I remember the boys being incredibly worked up. While we were doing that, we found out that the guys in the car were all in the military, all stationed at Fort Riley, Kansas. Honestly, at that point, I had no idea what would happen next, if anything, in the civilian aspect. It sounded like the military would be handling it from there, and I wouldn't know what the punishment would be. About a month later, we all got a subpoena for court, but for only one defendant. We got to the court and found out that the two guys in the front seat claimed they didn't know the guy in the back seat rolled the window down and flashed the gun at us. Not sure how in the hell that happens when you're going 72 miles per hour down the highway. You sure as hell know that a window is open. So those two fucks got off scot-free. The other guy we had to meet in court ended up getting off as well. The judge deemed that he didn't violate anything. Heather, I would love your legal opinion on this, as I do believe there is a law against this. Needless to say, it made for, I guess, a memorable birthday for my son. Even after writing this, I got pretty emotional with how I felt that day. Caleb and his friend Lauren were the only two who really saw the gun as well. I know it made a huge impact on them. If this makes it to air, I just want people to know to not be dumb fucks and know that what you do may be impacting not just an adult, which honestly doesn't make it any better, but the actions of that guy that day impacted a car full of young boys and made a massive impression on them. Love you both and keep it creepy.
That's a good way to put that too, is it affects who's in the car. And of course, an adult, that's, you can be terrified. You talk about the car, the fight Tommy broke up, or, you know, anytime people have drive close to you, tailgate you, whatever, cut you off. But when you're
a little kid,
yeah, but when you're a little kid and you see the glint of the metal of a gun next to your car, of a car that sped up to catch you, that's like a horror movie that these four kids are living through.
Yeah, it's always very interesting to think about, which is obvious, but like all the people in the car experienced that, but each person experienced it differently in some way. Mm-hmm. The mom had her own thing going on because she's also the adult. Mm-hmm. So that adds a whole other layer. But then, yeah, the kids, like their own interpretation of what happened and the feelings they had of like one of them was trying to celebrate their birthday. And now you always have that associated with your birthday, which, by the way, what a top tier day to turn 11 on 12, 13, 14. Man. 11, 12, 13, 14.
And this guy's ruining it with his gun.
Fuck this guy.
Keep your gun put away so you don't ruin a fun trip like this, man.
No. And you're in the fucking military. The three of you live on base. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, like you serve our country proudly. Like, you're not supposed to be bullying a child in a car. No. Like, that we appreciate your service and what you do, but not to a kid whose mom was just trying to not get T-boned because you blew through a stop sign or whatever. Yeah,
you gotta
like
check
that.
Yourself.
Yeah, it gets, and like you said too, for the kids that saw the gun, that's one fear. But the kids that didn't see the gun and all they feel is commotion, you're like, oh God, terror and violence can run up on me at any point. Like mm-hmm. you just don't realize, like, well, I mean, I think later on people often realize and they usually come to terms with it when they're like apologizing for what they did. But it's like, if we took a minute on the front load and go, what's this going to do to this person I'm about to do this to? Like, take a minute and go, I want to flash this gun, but that's a whole car full of kids. And like, that's fucked up. I'm not going to do that. But nobody thinks about their actions and they just commit crimes and get away with it. Yes, you're right. You're right. This is a crime.
And what a great person to legally give a gun to and then have fight for our country. Good for you, sir, that you are trying to threaten a woman and three young boys with your gun. I also don't buy for a second that the other people didn't know what was going on. You roll down the fucking window. Mm. It's like you opened an airplane door in flight.
Yes.
Like, you know, and 70? Then, yeah, come on. You, I don't buy that at all.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Pretty convenient excuse. Also pretty convenient that the one that did it, the judge just didn't have anything to prove it for these three military guys that live on base there. Isn't that just such a coincidence?
It does make you wonder if there's a different standard to which these young men were held. Probably, I think. It sounds like it because, you know, at the very least, brandishing a weapon like that is a threat. I bet Kansas mm-hmm. has a criminal threat statute. Arguably, if you are supposed to, if you're showing the weapon with the, and trying to intentionally place another person in reasonable apprehension of bodily harm. Like he's like going, you cut me off. I'm going to shoot you with this gun. That's aggravated assault. Yeah, that's aggravated. In my opinion, it's a felony. I think he should have got charged with ag assault felony, maybe plead it down to criminal threat and let him like, you know, do some, soul searching, do an anger management class or whatever. You know, you don't want to send someone immediately to jail because they got hot headed and were acting stupid, but you also don't want to go, you know what you did? No consequences. You're good.
Right?
Go ahead. Keep doing it. You know, you might want to go, hey, we know you flashed it because these kids are so freaked out. The mom is freaked out. We know you did this. We're going to need you to plead to something and take a course or take at least a path of action that's going to do something, a net benefit to society. But no, instead, he's just going to continue on.
Especially given, once again, that they're in the military.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, imagine if this was just a car full of, I don't know, black men. And this happened. You think that they're just going to get off with a slap on the wrist, you know, but like of all the people that we think shouldn't do this, someone who has like taken an oath to protect and serve the country and like, fuck off. I mean, anytime like children have to experience something before they should have to experience that, much like in the first story too. Mm-hmm. Like you're just going about your day having, you're like, I'm turning 11. Remember when you got to invite like two or three of your best friends to go do something fun like that? Mm-hmm. That was like the best fucking birthday.
The car ride is part of it too.
Yeah. Yeah. The car ride is part of it. You're listening to your tunes. Mm-hmm. You're having fun. Like
someone got shotgun. Mom's
being like cool mom. Yeah. You're doing all the cool fun stuff. And then this assholes, because I think all three of them knew what was going on, do something like this, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I imagine I would feel the exact same way, like Lindy, like recalling this, like that panic does still come up of like, you know, and because that was a really scary thing. You're responsible for not only yourself, but like four kids in there, one of them yours. It's that shit like that. Like, even if the other car's like, I'm just going to do this, just scare him. That's enough in and of itself, because you don't know like what that fear means for that person, what they've been through in their life, that maybe like seeing a gun like that triggers a huge panic attack and now you're behind the wheel of a car.
Yeah, especially you can't even express, oh my God, I'm so terrified right now, because you do have the four kids in there and you gotta be like, I gotta keep it together. But you're right, kind of that idea of like, I wish people, that's like my one, I think it would make the world a better place if everyone just paused for a second and thought, how is this going to impact this person I'm about to do it for, whatever. Because going, I'm just going to scare them. You don't know if you drive up and you've shaken that gun, is it another person with a gun that's going to shoot you back? First of all, don't do that. But also, like you said, you've just stolen something from this family that you can't even fathom decades later what you've done to them. And I feel like we should all take a minute on the front end to feel the weight of that. And if that's not possible, I hope that somehow this heaviness surrounds these people until they make amends for forgiveness. Like, you have the day you deserve is what I'm saying.
I think a lot of people like that think that they're not going to get in trouble because of their position. And so, you know, they're very loose and casual with shit like that. But that's not how you should do it, no matter who, military or not. Don't threaten anybody with a gun in the car. And for what? Because you fucked up and you were a bad driver and they just honked. We live in a world now where, like, why even have horns? Because if people honk, it is like a trigger for someone to just fucking get a gun out, slam, drive you off the road. Like, I am scared to honk.
I don't really honk anymore at all. My friend lives in New England, and a very small state in New England, and said up there they're very honky. Like, he's like, it's actually like when I get down here and I have a rental car, I have to be like, oh no, I can't honk in Texas. Because he's
don't automatically honk.
Yeah, he's like, I just kind of honk up there. And here I'm like, there's footage of people on 635 getting a honk and someone jumps out with a fucking machete and smashes the back window in. Like, you cannot, I don't want to put people off of Dallas, but just don't get to where you're going. Don't drive anywhere. Just wherever, if you can just find a place where you can stay and walk around. And you can't, by the way, spoiler alert. But if you could, it would be nice. But the driving in other places is, we said Tommy has driven in now 21 states, if not more, and is like Dallas, hands down, the worst drivers. Yeah. But yeah,
which is wild because we've driven in some places that were, I mean, he's driven downtown, the strip in Las Vegas, like the most downtown of like Detroit and like other places. And I'm like, but New York, Dallas is
New York
still,
City.
Yeah, he's driven in like downtown Manhattan. He's like, Boston. Dallas is still worse.
Yes. Every single one of these states, the driving is like, oh, you all at least reasonably adhere to some sort of a traffic law. And here it is free for all. And it sounds like at least these folks in Kansas, it was a bit of a free for all. But Lindy, good on you for making it out alive. Good on you for not just going, well, that sucked. I wish it wouldn't have happened. Being like, I'm going to run these motherfuckers down and call 911.
Right?
Stay in a safe distance while still, I bet it was satisfying to watch them all at least get arrested. That must have felt good. So,
yeah, definitely. Well, I'm glad you're all safe. And even though it's many, many years later, tell your son happy birthday. And what a fun birthday. And honestly, maybe he's at the age now where he's like, guys, do you even know what happened on my 11th birthday on 12, 13, 14? And now maybe it's turned into like a bit of a story he can tell. That, yeah, some lore for him. But definitely glad that you all got out of there safely.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
Well, this next one is from Sam, and it is called Stephen King's Imagination or Maine. Did we cross over into the dimension of Stephen King's imagination when we moved to Maine? It's been 4 years since we lived there, and the paranormal reality is still presenting itself to my husband and I in physical and metaphysical ways. I'm a travel nurse who loves the snow, craft beer, and treacherous terrains that are begging to be explored. Who knew my temporary home would end up being more sinister than the cold chill of winter on the Bar Harbor coastline? Day two of our time in Bangor, Maine, home to Stephen King, by the way. We headed to the thrift shops to grab plates, pots, pans, etc., as we don't pack these things and instead give them away when we leave or leave for the next tenants. We got a deal on a box full of plates, bowls, silverware, glass cups. We got home and put everything away, ordered out for pho, and fell asleep fairly early. I woke up to the air mattress bouncing me out of bed while my husband sprinted down the stairs with his pistol. All you could hear was glass shattering as someone, or something, was scavenging through the cabinets. I opened the window to the second floor, ready to climb out on the porch roof and drop the dogs in a few feet of snow and make a jump for it. It was January, negative 10 degrees outside, with a good 3 to 4 feet of snow on the ground. My husband came back upstairs and said everything was fine. Nothing was broken. when I started to ask him, literally what the fuck, the smoke detector started blaring. He grabbed one from the end of the hall, took the batteries out, and the motherfucker was still beeping. I panicked at this point. I called the landlord who came over, checked the gas stove, checked everything possible, and again, nothing. We asked her if the place might be haunted, and she laughed the most genuine, lighthearted laugh and basically called us tourons for not expecting the place to be haunted, saying, "It's Maine. What did you expect? Of course it is." The next few instances require knowing that the house is three stories with a basement. As you walk up the huge flight of stairs to the second floor, the door to the bathroom is right at the top. Then you must turn to walk down the hall parallel to the stairs to get to the bedrooms. The stairs to the attic slash third floor actually go over the bathroom. I was home alone one night, waiting for my husband Zach to get off work, and I decided to take a shower. I heard something running up and down the stairs that's behind the wall to the shower. "It's just pipes," I told myself. I turned up my music and continued with my shower until, in horror film fashion, the wall was hit so hard, every shampoo bottle, soap, and everything secured on the wall came flying in front of my face in what felt like slow motion, as I screamed so loud my dogs came tearing through the house, ready to kill whatever had me. I left the shower running, fumbled down the stairs in a towel, and called my husband screaming and crying. The shower didn't get turned off until he got home, because there was no way in hell I was going back up there. Not long after that, I was cleaning the kitchen and making dinner, and I heard something hit the vent. The original vents were still in the house, where the fire stove was in the basement, and vents could be opened to each floor of the house. I slowly looked into the vent as I crawled up to it on my hands and knees, looking into the basement. And the son of a bitch hit the vent again and hit me. I never went in the basement because just looking at the door alone made me want to throw up. Another time, I came home from work at 3 a.m., as I lived only a half mile from the facility for my lunch break. We had a fresh snow while I was at work, leaving a few feet on the ground. When I got home, I walked up the back flight of stairs, entered my house, and finally, after getting my frozen eyelashes unstuck from my face, I sat my keys down and began prepping some food. I sat down to start eating, my chair facing the back door. As I was lifting my fork to my face, I glanced up, because I heard something and saw movement at the door. Insert the scariest fucking music possible here, because I kid you not, I looked up and there was a fucking child looking at me through my back door. I dropped everything and ran to get Zach. He ran downstairs and opened the back door to only my footsteps coming up the stairs. No child footprints, no prints going down. This next one is the one that freaks people out the most. One night, as I was getting ready to go on a date with my husband, I was in the bathroom with the door open to the hallway. I was talking to Zach, who I saw plain as day standing in the doorway, and continued to have a conversation with him as I looked back in the mirror to fix my hair and makeup. Mid-conversation, I heard Zach at the end of the hall in the bedroom yell down the hall, "Babe, who are you talking to?" I made him come get me. I, yet again in tears, just kept asking him why. He told me he had seen things as well, but would never speak of it until we left. Just to be clear, Zach wasn't having a conversation from the end of the hall with me, or speaking at all. He had his headphones in and noticed I was talking in the bathroom, so he took his buds out and yelled to me. There was a little boy spirit who seemed to be around 9 years old, and a mother. The boy ghost and I would play little games, and he never seemed malicious at all. They disappeared when the dark entity came around, though. Fast forward to my next contract in Idaho. My husband and I were unpacking, and I saw him go sheet white. I asked him what was wrong, and he pulled a newborn blanket, like the type you get from the hospital, from the box. At our previous house, Zach had gone into the attic and found all kinds of baby toys and had seen this blanket. He'd ran straight for the trash, but days later, It ended back up in our laundry. He tried so many ways to get rid of it, but it always turned up again. Bad things don't happen, so it makes me wonder if that was the only way the boy could escape the hell he was living in the afterlife. My last shift I worked in Maine, I worked 14 hours, and we were so ready to leave the house, my husband packed everything that day and picked me up from work, and we left, driving until we had put a few hundred miles between us and that fucking dark state. To those who live in Maine, my hat goes off to you. I still love cold horror classics and a good sinister story. But my witchy friends, I advise to be extra cautious because living in a place where the veil was that thin was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. I don't play with anything that could allow the possibility of dark entities entering my life again. Love the podcast, and you ladies are literally my favorite. You both remind me of my best friend and I so much. We have wine nights once a week, and I may write in again soon to tell you about a short story of how we scared our landlord and convinced him we were witches. I'll dig up the videos of him going to public events with a megaphone, yelling at everyone that God was mad at them and wicked liquor would kill them. Can you guess we live in Tennessee? Anyway, much love, my sisters and sinister, Sam.
First of all, yeah, we definitely want a story about being mistaken for a coven. But man, Maine is a different place. It's so pretty, but there's something up there in all the cold, I think.
I've never been. My brother's long-term partner is from there, and she grew up on a island in Maine that, you know, you had to take a ferry to, like, get to school and stuff, and said it was great. Lots of crazy stories and stuff. But it is it's a different place, I think. Like Noah Kahn sings about. It's the cold and the dark. I'm just raised different, you know?
Yeah, no, it does something to you. It does something to your bones, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And especially if you're, like, not from there and you just moved there. But we flew into Bangor and then stayed at a Airbnb cabin kind of thing but the people would also stay there. So their stuff was everywhere. It wasn't like a Airbnb for the purpose. It was like our family all enjoy this, all these Dean Koontz novels. And you're like, I'm good. Thank you very much. But it was like after dark, I had a feeling of we just need to close ourselves in, not because I had a fear of the neighbors. There were critters, certainly. But I was like, I just want everything to just, we're shut in. Like they're, nothing. I don't want a little boy out my window. Like, Sam, what the fuck, dude? How did you live in that house? First of all, if you think you're getting broke into, like night one, night two, shit is bouncing you off your bed and it's the sound of smashing. And then when you go into the room and nothing is there, that does something to me.
That and the little boy would have sent me into a tailspin, certainly. Sam also included a picture of the house and it looks haunted, Sam. I'm sorry. It does. It just looks haunted. And I think that you're better off. I hope you're better off now. And maybe that blanket, that little boy was attached to it in some way. And he's like, I'm desperate to get out of this hell I am stuck in and thought you guys felt safe. So went with you. That doesn't mean that I would not have shit my pants on the spot if I'd opened that box and found that blanket.
Especially if it's like the fifth or sixth time you've thrown it away, like, good God. And yeah, there is something about the concept of whether you want to call it a mimic, a spirit, whatever, but something making you think that you've seen someone in your family or, you know, someone you're close to, and it then they're elsewhere going, Heather, who are you talking to? I just, someone wrote in a early, early Freaky Friday about, I believe it was like her dad or her brother was like walking upstairs. And then the brother, you know, came back the other way and they're like, oh, that was not, who, that looked just like you. Oh God.
I remember that one.
Anything like that makes me just, because I don't want to think that something could be like, Heather, open the door, come outside, it's me. And I'm like, I don't think it's you.
Not even just the voice. With this, she saw her husband. That's a whole new level of hell.
Yeah. That's a dark entity, in my opinion. Yeah. Get away from that. Well, good for you for getting on out of there. And I might trade a ghoulish child outside my window for a crazy street preacher. Who doesn't love a crazy street preacher, you know?
At least one of them you can touch and yes. feel, and you're like, this person, and others see him too. Okay. Yes. At least that, I mean, that's a step up.
That's true. That is true. Well, bless you, Sam. It sounds like you made it out just in time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this next one is from Hannah, and the subject line is a rural Alaskan near disappearance. Hi, Sinisterhood family. I'm thrilled to write in to one of my favorite podcasts. You both inspire me in so many ways. Let's dive in. For over 10 years, I've worked as a teacher in rural Alaska, living in remote villages in the western part of the state. These villages have tiny populations, typically between 40 and 60 residents, with fewer than 20 students from preschool to 12th grade. Picture this. No stores, no restaurants, no roads, limited phone services and internet, and snow covering the ground from October through April. Our only means of travel outside the village? Bush planes. In the winter of 2017, we faced some severe cold, and ice fog settled over our village. One day, a small bush plane took off with just two passengers, the pilot and our school board president. Shortly after takeoff, they crashed. Due to spotty cell service and non-existent internet, we relied heavily on VHF radios for communication in the village. As the head teacher, I had a radio in my classroom so that residents could reach me easily. Suddenly, I heard a call come through. There was a plane down outside the village, and the passengers were injured. My classroom erupted into chaos. My husband and several villagemen jumped on their four-wheelers and rushed out to find the plane. Unfortunately, after over an hour of searching, it was discovered that it had crashed across the ocean inlet and was inaccessible. While this was happening, I remained at the school with the kids. I could hear the pilot and passenger, but for some reason, they couldn't connect with the U.S. Coast Guard due to technical issues. I started relaying messages between the downed plane and the Coast Guard, who were struggling to locate them. Tensions ran high, especially with temperatures expected to plunge to negative 20 degrees Fahrenheit overnight. It was a life or death situation. Thankfully, 3 hours later, the Coast Guard located and rescued them. It took immense bravery and skill from everyone involved. Re-listening to the Alaska Triangle episode recently inspired me to share my story. It's hard for those outside rural Alaska to grasp just how remote and wild the landscape truly is. My village was 370 miles from Anchorage, with no roads leading in or out. In emergencies, we had no doctor or police, and state troopers could take 48 hours or more to reach us due to weather. Tragically, our tiny village experienced two disappearances within a few short years. One was a suspected suicide. The individual was never found. The other was a confirmed murder. Neither case received much media coverage. Rural Alaska is a breathtaking, wild, and challenging place. Despite the many systemic issues we face, it remains my favorite place in the world. Thank you for allowing me to share my story. I'll include some links below. Keep it creepy.
I have never been to Alaska either, and yeah. I want to go so bad. Every story I hear is either like this or just talks about how beautiful it is. And this yeah. is a combination of both.
Mm-hmm. No, right.
But the people that aren't from there, like so many places with extreme weather, they don't realize what it really is like. Mm-hmm. Like the people that live there, like, yeah, but you take a bush plane everywhere and like the cops might not get here for 48 hours. And if you don't have X, Y, and Z, you can't even go outside for 30 minutes. You're going to die.
Yeah.
Like, people like us don't understand that way of life.
Listen, we can't. We're city slickers, baby. We can't. Mm-hmm. I sound country, but no, I'm freeze like a popsicle in a cowboy hat. But for real, it's up there. It is mandatory that you act in a community type cooperative manner, because only 40 to 60 people in the whole village. If you're road raging and screaming at people, they're like, hey, Dale, like I live right down the road. Like I know that that was me, you know, and only having that like 20 kids from ages preschool to 12th grade, like you that's really wild. Have to like, yeah, come together. But that's yeah. it's, you know, I know Hannah, you were talking about the Coast Guard and everybody involved with like the rescue, but you are a hero too. Like,
right.
I mean, obviously you would do what anyone else would do, whatever. But to maintain your cool and manage a classroom and also be able to have the wherewithal to go, oh, fuck, they can't hear each other, but I can hear everyone. Let me just try to jump in.
Yeah.
Like, good for you. They might not have been found until much, hell much no. later without you. You're a fucking hero, dude.
Yeah, you really locked it down in more yes. than one ways. You are the type of person that we all need in high stress situations.
Mm-hmm. Like when my car started spinning out and I was like, ah! And Christy's like, focus on the road, maintain control. Like, we need folks like y'all. So thank you, Hannah. And I'm sure those dudes getting rescued are very grateful to the Coast Guard. Because God, imagine the harrowing nature of having to probably get a helicopter over some ocean inlet and hook something down and scoop a guy back up. Good God.
A bush plane going nuts, down. Dude. Plane crashes are so scary to me, mm-hmm. and the smaller the plane, the scarier, not because I think the more damage it will be done, but just because I'm like, I feel like the more likely it is for mm-hmm. something to go wrong could be in a small plane, and if that's the only way you can get in and out, then, I mean, every time you do that, and for if that is the only way you get in and out, you know, it becomes normal and stuff. Still dangerous, especially mm-hmm. if you have inclement weather like the majority of the year.
Yeah, especially something like ice fog is so scary. And a friend of mine who's a pilot took his dad and father-in-law to do, I think they did like ice fishing and stuff up in Alaska a couple years mm-hmm. ago. And he's a pilot. So he was able to fly one of these planes with these like huge, they look like four-wheeler tires. They're like these giant, almost tractor tires that you like can land on all kinds of rocks and stuff like that.
Wow.
And I remember I was like, is it more dangerous up there? He's like, I mean, it's just a larger swath of people like need to be pilots. So you might have yeah. a different collection of like pilot skill sets or whatever, or just a necessity. Like, we've got to fly out in this, and normally we maybe wouldn't, or we wouldn't want to, but yeah. There's no other way to get to XYZ, the hospital, the store, whatever we have yeah. to do. So,
or we have really to have supplies.
Yeah. Like,
we got to get them in somehow, you know? Yeah. yeah
for sure. Well, wow. Hannah, it sounds beautiful. You make it sound exactly like the television show Northern Exposure, which I always loved and would love to relive.
I often think about the latest season of True Detective, yeah. where it is just so remote. I can't remember the town they live in Alaska. I believe they say it in it. But it is so remote. Yeah, and so small like this. And people there, you know, learn to drive and all of that. But I'm like, I would just have to stay in my house 24/7. I'm not equipped. And people would have to like bring me things. I'd be the reason all the planes have to come and go. It's because they're like, well, Christy still hasn't learned how to drive in the snow. So we have to take her all of her things.
You're like, can I use this drone and send it out to do my bidding? And they're like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess you could. Turns out True Detective, I quickly Googled it, set in a fictional town of Ennis, but some of it was shot in Nome, Alaska, which I think is where it was kind of based off of. And others, it was shot in Iceland. I was like, we've got ice here. What the fuck, man?
I do remember reading that. Yeah. But wherever it was shot, gorgeous, yet it does Excellent. Have that like isolating feel to it, you know, and also where it's just dark half mm-hmm. the year, it's a whole new adjustment too.
Gives you a whole new appreciation. But I want to go.
I do want to go visit when it is like that, because I do want to see what that's like. Like, what would it be mm-hmm. like for it just to be dark all the time?
Yeah, and go get up and see all the shit in the Alaska Triangle we talked about, some of the mm-hmm. northern lights up further north. Oh, yeah. I don't know. It's definitely a bucket list place. I would love to go see some icebergs up there, too.
Absolutely.
Glaciers. All right, well, thank
glaciers.
You. Glaciers. Some glaciers. Well, thank you, Hannah. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. This next one is from Tori, and the subject line is My Psychic Awakening and Ghosts in Salem. Hi, Christy and Heather. I'm a longtime listener of Sinisterhood, but this is my first time writing into the podcast. I love the unique perspectives that each of you bring to your stories. I also particularly enjoy Heather's insights as a lawyer when it comes to breaking down true crime stories. My little Virgo heart adores it. My name is Tori, and since I was young, I can remember picking up on feelings of people and places. My mother always said that I'm an old soul, because I would be the two-year-old who would gravitate to the old ladies at parties or functions to hear their stories and reply in full sentences. The old ladies loved it. I was also the kid who loved to read about Greek mythology, Egyptology, and kid-friendly books about vampires, witches, and werewolves. As I got older, I became more aware of my ability to feel the energies of people and places. It was hard sometimes to communicate that I didn't like someone because I just didn't like their energy. Good luck trying to explain that as a preteen to your logic-based, if I can't see it, I don't believe it, police officer of a dad. So, for a time, I began to ignore these abilities. If I felt something or saw something out of the corner of my eye, I ignored it. I've always loved paranormal shows, but would see the psychics and mediums on the shows and think, that's not me. I don't have those abilities. Fast forward to when I was about 23 and finally ready to ditch the glasses I had worn since middle school and get LASIK. I went to all the appointments, with my mom, of course, because I had to be dilated at each one. I have a high prescription, so the surgeons wanted me to get one last check with a retinal specialist. I'll save you all the details, but suffice it to say that I had emergency surgery the day after the appointment with a specialist for retinal detachment in my left eye. Had this not been caught in time, I would have woken up in approximately a month blind in my left eye. This is how retinal detachments are usually found. It was not the norm for them to happen to someone as young as myself and to be caught prior to loss of vision. Needless to say, this was too much of a coincidence for me that this was one, caught in time, and two, my vision was preserved, and three, it all happened by a surgeon saying they, quote, just want to be certain before proceeding. I spiraled hardcore into all things metaphysical and became a mainstay at my local metaphysical shop. From there, I began taking some psychic development courses and, as of 2022, began offering readings to customers myself. I started out with oracle and tarot cards on something I call spirit writing. Spirit writing is something I created myself because I began noticing that during readings for myself as well as for friends and family, I could hear words as an inner voice in my head. Thinking there was something wrong with me, I immediately contacted a mentor of mine who is a psychic and a medium to ask for guidance. She asked me some questions about this experience, and we determined that I should explore this ability further. From this, spirit writing was born. In a spirit writing session, I will ask the person sitting for the reading, my client, if they have a particular question. If they do, I'll write this question down at the top of a sheet of paper. If they don't have a question, I will write, quote, what do I need to know? After setting our intentions, I will tune in, as I call it. With this, I connect to what I consider to be the divine slash universe slash God slash goddess slash spirit guide slash angels, etc., whatever my client wants to call it. And I will listen to the inner voice and begin to write down what I hear. During this time, I've used words that I don't typically use in my vocabulary. I'll write down words of encouragement when I don't know that someone has gone through the loss of a job or is looking to change careers, etc. Words will also come through as a collective we. For example, we are always with you is a common statement. I can't explain how I do this other than it's a psychic ability, but I thought that was it. I thought my spiritual gifts would consist of card readings and written messages. Boy, was I wrong. Those things out of the corner of my eye that I mentioned ignoring as I grew into my preteen and teenage years, well, they were back, and I began to sense more and more during my readings. I would see images in my mind's eye. I would see symbols, objects, and people. I even started getting names sometimes. I had the thought that they could be loved ones who had passed on, but was in denial. I'm not a medium, I told myself. I didn't see my dead great-grandma at the foot of my bed as a four-year-old. There's no way I'm seeing those things now. I took the leap of faith when I got several nudges from friends to begin offering mediumship readings when asked at the shop I read at a couple times a month. I still had in the back of my mind, though, that I'm not as good as the other mediums out there. A trip to Salem for my 30th birthday changed that. As a fan of all things paranormal, of course I had Salem on my bucket list. So for my 30th birthday, I requested that for our mother-daughter trip of the year, I wanted to go to Salem with my mom. My mom's always been supportive of me, and I can always count on her to go on spooky adventures with me. Love you, Mom. I booked us a 3-bedroom Airbnb townhome near the harbor in Salem, built in the early 1800s for the week. My mom can also sense energies in spaces, but that's about the extent to which she's willing to explore her abilities. The moment we stepped into our rental unit, I could sense that there was something there, but I didn't want to freak out my mom, so I kept quiet. Sometimes spirits are simply there to observe and nothing more. There were two bedrooms on the main floor, and the owner's suite was upstairs. My mom took one step into the owner's bedroom and said, "Nope, you can have this one," and turned around. There was a doorway in the room, which opened into a walk-in closet, and through that, you could then make it into the bathroom. I walked into this room and immediately knew something was hanging out in the closet. I'm of the opinion that most spirits are just hanging out and doing their own thing, so I take a "you don't fuck with me, I don't fuck with you" approach. I also protect my energy during my readings and can do the same at any time. So I took the owner's suite because it had the connected bathroom. That first night, I kept getting the mental image of a tall man in shadow standing in the closet doorway. He didn't do anything other than stand there. He didn't approach the bed, nothing moved, etc. So I set up my usual protections, called in my spirit guides to safeguard this space, and went to sleep. The man would do the same routine almost every night I was there. The next morning, I got up and walked downstairs. My mom saw me and said, "I need you to go into my room and tell me what the hell is in there right now." Having not told her anything, so I didn't freak her out, I asked, "What happened?" She then proceeded to tell me that she experienced what felt like small hands shaking her bed, and she woke up with her foot outside of the covers. Now, I have to explain that my mom never uncovers her feet at night. She grew up in an old farmhouse that everyone was convinced was haunted, and my mom slept with the covers over her head and completely cocooned by her sheets. To this day, she never sleeps with her feet uncovered. In response to this, I went into her bedroom and tuned in. I immediately saw a young girl in a nightgown and bonnet, about 8 to 10 years old. She said her name was Abigail, and she liked my mom because she had a nice maternal energy. After explaining to my mom that it was just a young girl excited to have someone around her who could interact with her, she calmed down. After speaking with Abigail, though, more information started coming through. I got the sense that Abigail had died from an illness, which was not uncommon in the time period of clothing I was seeing her in, 1800s to early 1900s. In the kitchen, I then saw a woman dressed in black with her hair in a tight bun and her head bowed. She told me that she was Abigail's mother and she was still playing hostess, making sure that everything was taken care of and that the guests were happy. I got the sense that Abigail passed first of the illness and the mother was in mourning before she too passed. The mother couldn't have been older than 35 or 40. It was then that I picked up on the man again. This time he was not in shadow. He was an older gentleman, dressed in overalls and work boots, and he did have silver hair. I got the sense that this was Abigail's father, but that he had died at a later time than his wife and daughter. Based on this clothing, I believe he was a laborer of some sort, possibly working at the docks we were close to. After relaying all this information to my mom, she was a lot less freaked out and even spoke aloud to Abigail on occasion. We learned to coexist with our ghostly host, but not without learning some of their rules first. As someone with high lens prescription, I'm talking negative 12 and negative 13 Coke bottle glasses, I sleep with a nightlight so that if I need to get out of bed, I can at least see the shadows of furniture so that I don't slam my foot into anything. In the owner's suite, I turned on the bathroom light and cracked the door whenever I went to sleep. The morning after our first night there, after telling my mom about the ghosts, I was in the bathroom brushing my hair, putting on makeup, and getting ready for the day. As I turned to leave the bathroom, the door slowly closed. Now, I'm always a logical person first, so I tried to recreate the phenomenon. I opened the bathroom door again and tried multiple combinations of turning and walking to try to get it to close again. Nothing. I explained aloud to whomever was listening that I have a strong prescription and needed to have the bathroom light on when I slept so that I could see. I just felt the message behind the action was close the door. The door closing by itself never happened again while we stayed there. Another instance of activity was the dryer door, swinging open when Mom and I were getting ready to leave for the day. I can't recall which day it was, but my mom and I were running a load of laundry through the washer and dryer before going out for the day. We got the laundry into the dryer, ran the cycle, and decided we would reheat and fold it all once we got back. Abigail's mom did not seem to like this. As I walked out of the bedroom door across from the closet where the laundry machines were, I saw the dryer door, which was only cracked, not latch, swing outwards to open. I immediately began speaking aloud to anyone listening that we were going out for the day and I planned to fold and put away the laundry later. My mom caught me talking to the air at the top of the steps and asked, "What are you doing?" So I had to explain to her what happened. Go mom for just saying, okay, and accepting what I saw and felt. Circling back now to Abigail's father hanging out in the owner's suite closet. Remember when I said I thought he could have worked at the docks? Well, I got the mental image of items being exchanged in a low-lit room, and it didn't give me a good feeling. I don't know if there was some illegal smuggling or other activities to make ends meet, but I felt that Abigail's dad had a hand in something and was now afraid of judgment after his death. I got the sense that Abigail and her mother stuck around after their deaths to wait on the father to pass so they could all move on together. The father's fear of judgment is keeping him from moving on, and subsequently, Abigail and her mother are sticking around as well and refuse. I don't believe in forcing spirits to move on that are not being malicious, and this family just seems to be hanging around together in their home. I was going to break that up if no harm was being done. I spoke aloud and told Abigail's father that I did not believe in forcibly moving anyone on who was not causing harm. I told them that they were not stuck in this place, that they could move on into the light at any time, and there would be no judgment. It's my belief and experience that loved ones are on the other side to greet us when we cross over. Once I said these words aloud, the feeling of being watched in the bedroom was gone. That night, I did not experience Abigail's father looming in the closet doorway watching me. I don't know if he saw me as a threat to his family and was keeping an eye on me, or just trying to intimidate me. However, I wish he would have let me know this issue sooner so I could have addressed it. It was at that point that I desperately wished that I could find some documentation or record of Abigail and her mother and father's existence. Unfortunately, my Google searching came up empty. All I can say is what I felt and perceived from these energies. When we packed up to leave, I felt that Abigail was sad to see us go. I guess not many guests interact with her and her family or even perceive that they're there. I told Abigail she had to stay here with her family and she was not permitted to follow us home. I also promised we would come back and visit again when we could. I'm sharing my story not just as entertainment, because that's probably the best story that I have, but also to let those out there wanting to explore their psychic abilities know not to give up. Your journey will not look like the TV shows, and that's okay. It's okay if you didn't have these abilities when you were a baby. We all grow at our own pace. And if your abilities manifest in ways you haven't seen examples of, don't be afraid to try something new. Keep it creepy, Tori.
Wow, Tori. Well, I think that's a great advice there at the end of, I don't know how people learn that they have these abilities other than maybe it starts as a kid and then you hone it in this type of way. But really the only things you see are these like glamorized, like the Long Island Medium and all these, you know, like over the top characters. But I think mostly it's just like, regular people that can, you know, tune into something. They're a little more in tune with stuff than others are.
Yeah. And it's one thing if you want to like tap into your ability and like use it to like give readings to people or whatever. But you're right. We often see it on TV as kind of like this polished, shiny, they're charging tickets and made into this like big thing. And I think more often it's more like what Tori experiences, where it is almost like a shared meditative experience where it's like, we're going to get really quiet and listen and like connect in a way that our molecules can exchange and our energies can exchange in whatever way that is. So I think it's beautiful, Tori, that you leaned into that despite the fact that's scary to be able to see shit, see entities, hear words, hear people talking, whatever, you know, not to be afraid of it, but like saying, this is how I'm going to protect my own energy, how I'm going to do it and how I can work with other people and hopefully give them messages or, you know, give them some comfort or whatever. I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I love that. It also makes me want to, I want to take some classes. I want to do something. I don't, I get feelings. I don't hear things out loud. I've never like really heard that, but I'll like random words and thoughts or images will pop into my head. And usually I'm just chalk it up to generalized anxiety disorder. But what if this whole time I'm really psychic? Wouldn't that be a fun twist?
I mean, it could
be. We figured it out.
We got to get some books or something. I told you back in law school when I was Googling how to tell if you're psychic. And my friend's like, what are you Googling? I'm like, this class is boring. I think we should have known back then. I should have known if I was Googling that during an administrative law class that I was like, not into it. But jokes on all of us. Chevron doesn't exist anymore. So I was right to Google my psychic abilities. If I really was psychic, I would have told them this whole class is worthless because in 5 years, all of this case law is going to go away. But Thank you so much, Tori. That's the magic of Salem, baby. There's something about, much like Maine. There's some good feelings up in Salem.
There in the north, with northeast, some shit's going down up there. But when we went to Salem, had a blast. Would love to go back. Would love to get a different reading from people that we have had referred to us as very well regarded mediums in the area. So and plus it was just such a cool place. The weather, everything. It was just, I could live there.
Well, yeah, let's go back.
Definitely. I could definitely live there. 100%.
Oh, right up against the water too. Man, it's gorgeous. Well, thank you, Tori. We appreciate you. Sinister Hood will be right back. All right, this last one's from Sarah Frizz, and the subject line is Martha's Chapel Cemetery. Hey, ladies, I love your podcast, especially the Freaky Friday episodes. I was listening to the most recent episode, and as soon as I heard one of y'all mention a demon road, I thought of Martha's Chapel Cemetery in Huntsville, Texas. Then, when I heard the name read during the tale, I got goosebumps, literally. I've been to that specific cemetery and had a very uncomfortable experience that I will share with you today. So, a bit about me. I'm a single, quirky, neurodivergent lady that has moved around quite a bit since turning 18. I lived in Houston, Texas for 9 years. Since I moved around a lot, I don't really have a lot of close friends, and certainly don't have many friends that would want to go explore a demon-infested cemetery deep in the middle of nowhere. I have been on many paranormal expeditions, whether it be alone, with a friend, or a ghost tour group. I've experienced many strange things, but I haven't gone on any paranormal adventures in a while, since I'm getting older and I have so many responsibilities in my busy life. So this story takes place in January 2017. I had read about Martha's Chapel Cemetery and saw that it was only about an hour from where I lived. I reached out to one person who was kind of into some of the same creepy things as myself, but they were busy the day I planned on making the trek. Going up I-45 from Houston to Huntsville is a drive. Once you take the exit, then it's navigating through a rural area, which was really cool since I lived in the inner city and I'm a nature girl at heart. I even pulled over and took a picture of some cows. I actually passed Demon Road, even though I was really paying attention and looking for it. I believe the actual road has a name that's not Demon Road, so I had to drive a ways, pull over, search the map, and before I knew it, I made it back to the entrance of Demon Road. I pulled down the road, driving slowly, and it felt like it took a very long time to get from the beginning of the road to the cemetery. It seemed to be about a mile. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention, I did this adventure during the day, especially since I was going alone, and I am usually too scared to do these kind of things at night, regardless. I pulled up to the cemetery gate at the end of Demon Road, which looks almost like a cul-de-sac. I parked close to the entrance of the cemetery. Before making this trip, I had read up on all the folklore and saw the creepy pics. I got out of the car, and immediately I felt uneasy and that the area had an ominous energy. I didn't even go into the cemetery, and I was getting bad vibes. It felt like something was watching me from the woods. I had seen an old farm gate that was overgrown just a few yards away. Since I was already getting freaked out, I figured I would go take a cool photo of the gate. I did this to test the area and see how I felt. I took the photo and then started back toward the car/cemetery. I got to the trunk of my car and I just stood there. I knew I was not going into the cemetery. It just felt wrong there. I turned around and there were two small dogs sitting near where I had just taken the photo of the overgrown gate. Now, these dogs were not large. I believe one was a Chihuahua mix and the other was some sort of terrier. I did not wait around to get a good look. That was my cue to exit. I was literally just where they were probably about a minute earlier. The fact that they were sitting down, watching me, was creepy. I had felt like something was watching me, and sure enough, there they were. I got in my car, turned around, and started to journey back out onto Demon's Road. These little dogs followed me. At this point, I was very freaked out. Like I said, this road is about a mile long. The more I sped up, the faster the dogs ran, and they were practically next to my door the whole time, even when I hit around 30 plus miles an hour. At least that's how it felt. I got out to the end of the road and, freaking out, turned out onto the main road off Demon Road. The dogs saw me exit, and they sat down once I was past the barrier. Upon my exit, there were a couple of electric maintenance men at a telephone pole who looked at me like, what the hell was she doing back there? I was so glad to be safe and away from that place. In retrospect, I think the dogs could have been one of two things. I think they may have been protecting me, perhaps sent by a spirit guide. The other option is that they were protecting the cemetery. Despite the dogs being small, it was just eerie as hell to see them watching me and then chase me all the way out. I have many other paranormal and strange stories, so if you like this one, there's more where that came from. Keep it spooky, Sarah Frizz.
Oh, yeah, please send in all your other spooky stories. You are a brave one to go on these adventures alone. It's, right? I, even just like one other person, I'm like super freaked out. But by myself, I don't think I would be brave enough to do this.
Oh, such a brave soul. That's what we always say. Like, we're not going to go to this place or it's too scary. If we go with our friends at the Ghost Guild, there's a whole guild. You know, there's like a dozen or so people. There's like equipment. There's like snacks involved. We've got a PDF with a map of where we're going. That, it's like some people like to camp and then some people like to glamp. Some people like to ghost hunt. We like to like ghost guild hunt where it's like very well planned and there's a PDF.
A para glample investigation.
Para glamping. That's what we're doing. Because this takes some chutzpah, some bravery to be like, I'm going to get out there and like, I'm just going to go. Like my friend's busy. Fuck it. I'm going to still go. Like
I love it.
Go out and see them little ghosty dogs or dogs that are just really partial to the cemetery. I feel like if I was dead and buried, the goose would be this over my grave. And if anybody walked near my grave, she'd be like,
you think she's going to outlive you? I like that. Or just be her ghost haunting the cemetery that you reside in.
We're connected forever. Whichever of us dies first, the goose and I are bonded forever for eternal life. But the having them stop, like sit there and stare at you, and then when you drive away that they run next to you all the way to a certain point and then stop, sure, could be well-trained dogs. You ever try to train a chihuahua? Really fucking good luck. Hard.
Maybe they much like, I can't remember which one it was, the haunted manor of Bly Hill.
Oh, no where way.
Did I just combine two of them?
Oh, so good. That was perfect.
What are they?
The Haunting of Bly Manor and then The Haunting of Hill House. But The Haunted Manor of Bly Hill is such a, like, that would be something on SNL that they would name it in, like, where everyone just talks in monologues that are 30 minutes long.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, whichever one, like, if you had died there, you couldn't cross past the gate. Mm-hmm. Perhaps this is a similar situation.
Yeah.
Even with the animals.
It loops you back in there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like every time you think you leave, you like are back where you started from. Damn. Cemetery.
Well,
like
we've learned that you can't go to this cemetery. Or if you do, weird stuff's going to happen. So maybe you do want to go, but just proceed with caution and respect.
We don't often drive down to Houston, but we don't never drive down to Houston. So true. I think we're going to have to plan it in the next time we go. We passed that statue in Huntsville.
Yeah, we'll just make a day of it. We'll go to the prison and then we'll go to Martha's Chapel Cemetery, get a bite to eat and just see where the day takes us.
Have a Freaky Friday tale of our own. Well, thank you very much for sending that in, Sarah Frizz. We appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you to everyone who sent in your Freaky Friday stories. If you have an odd but true story, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO, you had a brush with true crime, or you felt the presence of an otherworldly being, send them in at sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday. If you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next. Even by joining for free, you also get a archived bonus content released to you once a month. You can also join at a certain tier and get over 900 hours of various segments like True Crime Headlines, Dear Sinister, Judge Christie, Heather Saves, Am I the Asshole, and Popular Opinions, and the list goes on and on.
And there's no better time to join than now. Not only do we have free trials where you can join at any time, join for a week for free, and if you cancel any time before the week is over, then you don't get charged. But if you stick around in the month of October, it's the best time to sign up for an annual membership. This month, we are giving away 2 free months for all new annual memberships. So if you are a current monthly member and you want to switch to an annual membership or you've never joined before, now is the time to do it because you get 2 free months. I mean, it's the best deal we've offered, and it's the best time of year. So why not offer it again?
Yeah.
Available to new annual memberships only. Current annual memberships are not eligible for the discount, and it ends October 31st. So sign up now. What do you get when you sign up for Patreon?
Oh, my goodness. Ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live bonus content that's also streamed, weekly audio bonus content, monthly mini-sodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet. Certainly one, I say that with my full chest. And speaking of live streams, Heather, we have just maybe more than we've ever had in 1 month since we started this. We're doing it this month.
We're getting streamed. And the first one, we're kicking off October 24th at 8 p.m. We're doing a live episode Q&A. Speaking of our Ghost Guild buds, mm-hmm. Nelson Nouse, the executive director of the Ghost Guild, is going to join us and talk about our most recent paranormal investigation. As we revisit the Trans-Allegheny Asylum in Weston, West Virginia. So that's October 24th at 8 p.m.
Then great way to start off getting spooky.
Then talking about actual ghost hunts. Mm-hmm. And then October 29th at 8 p.m., speaking of a community of the best listeners on the whole internet, it is our monthly live Q&A where we hang out with all of our besties. We just get so excited when we see your names pop up in the chat. So that's going to be October 29th at 8 p.m. Come hang out with all of us. And for Halloween Eve, October 30th at 8 p.m., we're doing a movie roasting party.
It's happening. We had three contenders that everybody could vote on. And last I checked, Cocaine Werewolf was winning by a landslide.
I think he still is.
I think that's what it's going to be. I think we're going to be watching Cocaine Werewolf, which you couldn't go wrong with any of the ones that were picked. But this is going to be a wild good time.
I think so. Like we said, you can't fight a cocaine werewolf. So he was going to win regardless, just physically. So October 24th, 29th, and 30th, all at 8 p.m. Central, all on Crowdcast via Patreon. So head over to Patreon, check it out. Head over to sinisterhood.com, click shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show, follow us on socials, and check out the episode description. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists, and if you were not able to join our digital global experience with Moment Live for 14 days after that last show, you can watch it. So go to sinisterhood.com/liveshows for tickets for the Moment. You can also go to
moment.co/sinisterhood.
There it is.
Follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod, and like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Watch full video versions of our episodes on YouTube or ad-free on Patreon. You also watch clips of the show on TikTok and order your own custom video shout-outs on Cameo. Christy, where are you at online?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Sinning.